shot in the dark. Where he sort of spark. I'm a light that's too bright for me to see.
Welcome back to the Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. Oh, all right, kids, here we go. Episode 295. No new shows for a couple days. I apologize. I've been under the weather and not like crazy sick. Just, you know, like that. You know that feeling you get like when you're like, you wake up and you're like, oh, I feel like hell and I just need some coffee and I'll feel better after I get some coffee. So picture you get like your first cup of coffee and you don't feel any better and you're like, oh, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to get like some breakfast. It's probably low blood sugar. You know, you get another cup of coffee and some breakfast and you're like, well, that'll fix it, right? And no. So it's like you're just not getting better. I feel like, you know, like in a video game where you shoot some things coming at you and you have this, you know, laser weapon that you can shoot them with and it makes them have 50% of their power until that wears off and then they can kind of come at you full strength again, you know. So I feel like I got zapped by that thing, you know. I feel a little better today. I've been I took the day off. I had a couple, all of my bar hours were scheduled towards the end of the week. So, I already had a couple days off and I thought surely I'd get better by then. But yesterday I felt like I might've been on the downhill slide. So I kind of just took off today, just, you know, and that's the thing is that when you work in service industry, I've just always, different people have different takes on this. And I can't say I haven't ever been a business owner and not had any option and worked when I was sick. And I'm pretty good at like washing the hands and knowing how to prepare food and do what you need to do to keep people safe. But there's only so much you can do. And I've always been a stickler on not working in service industry if I'm sick. It's just not something that I want to do, you know? Sorry, I'm getting distracted. I made a mistake of leaving my email up on my desk and an email came in. So man, you know, I tell you what, every time I get sick, I have the same routine. Doesn't matter what it is. It's tons of vitamin C, the little zinc lozenges. I usually do echinacea. I didn't do echinacea this time. I didn't have any. I just never got around to going and buying some. And then the main thing I do is I just try to sleep my way out of it. I sleep my way out of it. Deep sleep, lots and lots of sleep is what I can sleep my way out of most things and kind of avert, which it seems like I've done this time. I was kind of on my way to a pretty good, solid knock me on my butt cold or maybe even the flu or something, and I seem to have fought it off, and I did it mostly by sleeping. And if you're going to sleep off a cold or sleep off the flu, there's one thing that is your best friend in the world, and that is NyQuil. NyQuil is your friend, and they have the NyQuil Severe now that has phenylephedrine in it. But I don't like phenylephedrine. I'm just going to do a little sidebar riff, a little rant about this. So I have bad sinuses. Now, as my friend Kelly has pointed out to me, and I just bought a book about this, your sinuses are really directly related to your microbiome. And so it might be microbiome stuff that I've had for a long time. But from the time I was a little bitty kid, I've had bad sinuses, and I got it from both sides. Mom and dad both have bad sinuses, and I got them too. So I've been taking those little red Sudafed pills since I was a little kid. And it was kind of cool at first because so then people started making meth out of the pseudoephedrine, right? So that's one of the components that these people are like making this real low dollar meth. That's what they make. They make it out of this pseudoephedrine. And so, you had to, in some states, I don't know how it is in Missouri anymore where I grew up. I know in California and in Colorado now, I have to swipe my license. I have to like give them my ID and they have to look me up in a database and I have to sign something saying that I'm not making meth to get pseudoephedrine. Because if you just go to the shelf. So sidebar within a sidebar, I'm still kind of sick and really kind of out of it. So this might be a little bit of a rant, more random than normal show, because I'm probably going to lose my train of thought several times. Just so you know what you're getting into going in. I just didn't want to go another day without a show and I don't really feel up to it, but I'm going to give it a shot and I've got enough outline to talk about. So, anyway, so in the sidebar, inside the sidebar, so going back to the Sudafed sidebar, which was the original sidebar. See, I'm doing pretty good. If you go to the shelf and just get the Sudafed, the little red pills or any of the, like, you know, Sudafed sinus or Tylenol sinus, it's all got that. It's called phenylephedrine. It's like pseudoephedrine, but it's different. It's phenylephedrine. You can't make meth out of it. But it just doesn't work as well. Now, it kind of threw me off because I figured out that when it first came out, it worked even maybe a little better. Because I think I had been taking so much of the pseudoephedrine for so long because I have bad sinuses since I'm a kid, you know. I think I had developed a pretty serious tolerance to pseudoephedrine. So not having it for a long, the phenylephedrine actually worked really well compared to what I was used to for a while. Because the pseudoephedrine had stopped working and I would have to take enough of it to kind of make my stomach really upset. And I'd end up throwing up and stuff just to try to get a sinus headache to go away. So this time around, but then the phenylephedrine kind of stopped working as well. And then I went back, swiped the ID, got the real stuff, the pseudoephedrine. And that worked really well again. So that's beautiful. So I try not to take it very often, not to develop a tolerance to it. But it's been kind of the evolution of my relationship to this drug. God, you never know what you're going to hear when you tune in, do you? I heard NyQuil. That's what got me started. So the NyQuil Severe that they have out now had phenylephedrine in it, but it's more expensive and I don't like the phenylephedrine. So I got the NyQuil, the regular NyQuil, but then took it with the pseudoephedrine. And I'm telling you what, man, there's like four or five drugs in that cocktail and a good shot of alcohol. And I've been off booze for all of Lent. And I tell you what, NyQuil knocks me out in a way that it never has right now. I slept really good the last few nights taking a big old shot of NyQuil before I went to bed. I can see where this could become like, you know, like, oh, every night I just want to have that NyQuil. And I mean, I kind of been having insomnia, so I've been taking the, what do they call it? Diphenhydramine succinate or whatever. The stuff that's in Tylenol PM, but without the Tylenol, the non-NSAID part of Tylenol PM is that knock you out stuff. I've been taking one of those every once in a while because I just haven't been sleeping very well. But, hey, you know, I do live in Denver, Colorado, so there are, shall we say, air quotes, other options. I'm just going to leave that floating out there. You guys can speculate what you want on that. You know what? Speaking of, I want to get back and talk about sickness a little bit. I've got some thoughts on it. But before we go to the break, okay, air quotes reminded me, not on the outline. I'm just going to rant for a second. And it's towards the end of the break, so I can't go too far. That'll be good. Our lovely president said not too long ago in a tweet at 5:30 in the morning that the previous administration, they wiretapped Trump Tower. And I've said before that it's probably the case. I'm assuming they have. I can see where this is going. They were wiretapping people from Russia. Some of the people in the periphery of the Trump world were talking to Russians. And so some of that got picked up and that's how some of it came out. But it's looking pretty bad in places. They have people associated with Trump that was predicting The Podesta was going to have a hard time soon with some information came forward, and he's been linked to the hacker that claimed responsibility for the DNC hack. Not looking good there. But what I wanted to get mad about here is that now Spicer and some of these people are trying to walk this back and saying, look, I mean, it was kind of in air quotes, you know, he didn't mean they were, you know, they tap Trump Tower. He's just saying, you know, they tap Trump Tower, you know, like in the general air quotes sense. I'm like, the guy obviously made very, very, very particular accusations and then came behind it with tweets saying this is going to be the biggest political scandal since Watergate, blah, 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 which it would have been. But now it's like, oh, well, you know, our crazy president, what he says, you know, something stupid. Excuse me. I need a cough button. He's just talking in general. He's just saying this stuff in general. You know, kind of, you got to take it as kind of a gestalt, kind of a rhetorical gestalt riff or something. No, this is what I was worried about. This is not how you communicate when you're a president. You don't just toss out weird, crazy, over-the-top accusations, fire up a bunch of people, and then when it all starts coming down, you send your press secretary out to say, well, it was in air quotes, and then go do something stupid to distract everyone. That's just not how you run a country. I don't care. And on top of that, give me my tax cut. It's the only thing I consoled myself with whenever you were running, Mr. President, is business owners getting a good solid tax cut. So give me my tax cut, or I'm just going to keep griping at you. I'm still going to gripe at you, but at least I'll have my tax cut. All right, you're listening to The Counterposition. I'm sick and feisty today. We'll see you on the other side.
I'm a sacred word to mutter. Ran too fast and turned to butter. I'm a bit too much for me to chew.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counterposition, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a skip across the pond. I'm an ocean on and on. I'm a fish with no bowl that I outgrew. Lift my blood. The only one on track.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Redbox Media. All right. Sorry about my little repressed coughing fit there at the end of the last segment. This is the most I've talked in about 3 days. In the first segment, I've been kind of holed up in my room in quarantine, just working on stuff and reading books and trying to sleep as much as I can. yeah, I mean, yesterday we had this huge computer calendar mix up, changing systems. An event got changed and I realized that I was off and I was supposed to be where I work providing drinks for a very important large meeting. And so I had to hop up and run down there in the middle of the day while I was feeling really bad and knock that out. So other than that, the only other thing I've done of any real worth while I was sick is make chicken. And now I'm making chicken stock. So I got me a good solid, I'm telling you, one of the best things you can get, I mean, chicken soup, chicken stock, just real bone broth is such a gift of the gods. I mean, it's just like, it's so good for you and it's so delicious and stock is so easy to make and it makes so much difference. And I tell you what, a lot of you listening live near Trader Joe's. I live a couple blocks from a Trader Joe's, which is amazing because even when I lived in California, the closest I ever lived to a Trader Joe's was on the other side of town. I lived way down in Midtown Ventura and the Trader Joe's was way out on Victoria on the other side of town. I live like two and a half blocks from a Trader Joe's now. That's one of my favorite things about this house. But they have organic free range chicken, the whole chickens. You can get a good size fat chicken, not an oversized chicken, because that means it's got weirdness in it. If they're big and giant breasts on it and stuff, It's all plumped up, probably full of weirdness and antibiotics and all kinds of crazy kind of growth hormone or whatever. Don't get those. Get a real chicken. And you can get a real chicken for like $13-14 there. Like a big old chicken that will feed a family with meat for, and then make a big old pot of stock. So I got me one of those, roasted it over some vegetables, picked it clean, threw the bones back in with the vegetable scraps. And I tell you what, man, a bunch of bones that you would normally just toss away, and the parts of the celery and carrot and onion that you chop up for some soup to roast up that you would probably throw away, throw all that crap in a Dutch oven or a stock pot, put some good water on it, a little bit of sea salt, throw some herbs in if you got it. I tell you what, man, that's just alchemy right there. You can make something so good. Make stock, get bones, get grass-fed beef bones and roast them. Stock is so good for you. All right, so there's my little impromptu commercial. Today's episode of the Counter Position was brought to you by Chicken Stock. Chicken Stock. Healing people of sickness for as long as there's been chicken. Available at a Trader Joe's near you. some assembly required. Oh, see, I'm easy to crack myself up when I'm out of my head sick. I'm actually not that bad. I feel best today than I have in about 3 days. I'm on the upswing, I think. I'm not going to keep taking all the stuff. I'm going to hit it hard with some chicken soup later today. I went to Trader Joe's while I go on the way home from going to confession and got some corned beef, some cabbage, and some potatoes, and gonna make some corned beef. You know what? And you know what? I'm going to eat corned beef on St. Patrick's Day. And I know what you're thinking. Wait a minute. St. Patrick's Day is on a Friday and it's Lent. And I'll say, yes, but your bishop can remove the responsibility for abstinence during certain feast days or certain days like St. Patrick's Day, which I get it is not even really St. Patrick's feast. And I know that nobody in Ireland ever cares about St. Patrick's Day, but St. Patrick's Day in America is an American Irish immigrant thing. Half of my family, like my dad's side of the family, a good chunk of them from Ireland, Irish immigrants. It's a thing, right? But I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, Andrew, you live in the Denver Archdiocese. And Archbishop Aquila, God love him, did not let us have meat this Friday. And you would be correct, dear listener. But I just found, I got an impromptu Facebook lesson in canon law around this exact issue. So the lovely and talented Jared Stout, shout out to Jared Stout, who is a professor, sometime professor at the Augustine Institute, and also in my integral ecology reading group, threw up on Facebook, hey, I live in the Colorado Springs Archdiocese. So there's the kicker. The Bishop of Colorado Springs, he's letting his diocese eat meat this Friday on St. Patrick's Day. So Jared comes up on Facebook and says, hey, I live in the Colorado Springs Archdiocese, but I work in the Denver Archdiocese. I'm going to be there all day. And I attend a parish in the Denver Archdiocese. And a couple of canon expert types, I won't say canon lawyers, but people who study canon law came on and they were all in agreement. And I would have never thought this. I would have thought that it would have been your allegiance and like where your church home is. But it turns out that just, and everyone agrees, no one's even arguing about it, which is rare about canon law. It goes by where you are physically at, where you are at the moment. So, of course, knowing, you know me, my, in the classic Greek sense of the word, erotic relationship with all things that used to have a face that can be cooked and put into my belly. I of course, quickly shot off a text to Chris Stefanik. And so Chris Stefanik, world famous, Catholic famous speaker type, who happens to be a really good friend of mine and who I've been meaning to hang out with for a while. And I said, Chris, if I'm not mistaken, Castle Pines, where you live, is in the Colorado Springs Archdiocese, is it not? And Chris, special treat Stefanik, if you're a listener, you know the joke, said, why, yes, it is. And so we have planned copious meat-based shenanigans involving at least corned beef and possibly smoked brisket and multiple other things that used to have a face, along with other delicious things. And I think I'm going to, I don't know, but I said I was going to go 40 solid days. I'm still thinking about it. I may actually drink on St. Patrick's Day. I kind of always do during the break, but I'm kind of on a run with the no drinking thing right now. And I really want to say that I went 40 days. I could do it. I don't have to. I mean, at this point in the game, not drinking has not become an issue. I do not even think about it now. So I've proven my point to myself, which I failed to do in Advent. I'm wearing my heart on my sleeve here. I tried to go 40 days without drinking alcohol during Advent and did not make it. That's why I was going to be so strict. So I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens. I may have a couple glasses of wine on St. Patrick's Day. There's nothing wrong with a couple glasses of wine, some delicious meat, celebrate my heritage with my other Irish brethren, including my good friend Chris. So there's nothing, it would not be wrong to do so. It is certainly within the scope of what is allowable. The question is it helpful? So who'd have thought that, though? Who'd have thought that? I think that's kind of beautiful. Right. I think that's beautiful that there is, it's so incarnational and so local, right? That the divine order interacts and incarnates in the temporal order, even the geographic order, that God will hold you accountable for something here because of authority and relationships here, but a few feet away, no, because this is where this authority rests. And I just think that sounds so petty to someone from the outside, but I love this, shall we call it the subsidiarity of the kingdom of God. I love this divine localism, this divine, this interaction between the supernatural and the natural, the non-material and the material, the divine and the incarnate, the cosmic and the local. You know, I just think that's super cool that there's literally, in the sense of, I mean, that's what's so funny is people think that we're this monolith, right? We're the Catholic Church. It's global. It's Catholic. That means universal. It's a monolith. But it's actually played out very, very much within the human scale. Christ became man so that we could kind of get a glimpse. He says, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father, right? God discloses in the particular, the infinite becomes particular right here, you know? And I think that we live that out in little things like that. And I think that's kind of cool. I'm kind of into that. That's what I'm kind of riffing on today. So when we get back from the break, I want to talk a little bit more about that. And I never got to my riff on sickness. I want to get to that too. And I want to talk about an idea that I saw in John Senior's book, The Restoration of Christian Culture. So you are listening to The Counterposition. I am your host, Andrew Whaley. We'll be right back.
Lynn, how we crave a hanging in its dark.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
people singing, please don't stay, but please don't go.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your infirmed host, Andrew Whaley. And we are talking about a bunch of stuff all at once because I'm still a little sick and a little out of my head. So things are not exactly linear right now. We were talking about this. I had this little sidebar on corned beef because I bought some corned beef, and that reminded me of this canon law thing that we talked about, the canon law, and how the Diocese of Colorado Springs is allowing people to eat meat on Friday. Denver is not. And it turns out it is based on where you are at the moment, your physical location. You have to play by the rules. When in Rome, you know, you render under Caesar what is Caesar's, right? So it's like you render under Colorado Springs what is Colorado Springs when you're in Colorado Springs. And I said that was beautiful and interesting because of the particularity, the subsidiarity of the kingdom of God, the divine localism, if you will. And so it's funny. I was reading John Senior's book, The Restoration of Christian Culture. Now, I have grown up around Seniorites, or mostly the children of Seniorites. I didn't grow up around them. I grew up spiritually around them because I ran into them in my mid-20s out of Thomas Aquinas College. A lot of the kids from St. Greg's. Some of my favorite families, the McCarthys, the Masons, the patriarch of both of those families were students of John Senior out at the Integrated Humanities Project in Kansas. Bishop Conley of Lincoln, Nebraska, also a student of John Senior. Great. I'm going out to, if any of you are going that are listening, I want to have a counterposition meetup and maybe record a live show. I am going to be at the symposium on the advancement of Christian, on the advancement of the new evangelization at a Benedictine over the end of the month, over to like the third or so, second. And Conley speaking there, and I'm going to try to, get hooked up with him and to get hooked up with, people from the Integrated Humanities Project, maybe go over to Lawrence and get a look at that place, maybe do an interview. I'm dragging the gear with me. I know I always drag the gear with me and then it never happens, but trying to get this stuff set up in advance is kind of hard. But there's going to be so many cool people to interview. I'm hoping to just get a ton of interviews. It would be a blast. But anyway, so I'm reading this is the first time I'm sitting down and reading John Senior. Now, John Senior has a real deep love of tradition, and he's kind of big on Latin. He's big on the Latin Mass and Latin liturgy and all that. And I've got my thoughts and my love and my frustration with the traditional Latin Mass crowd and all that. I have friends who are traditionalists. I have friends who have been SSPX. I think, if I'm not mistaken, Senior died SSPX, which is a kind of a, depending on who you ask, semi-schismatic. Is that honest enough? Semi? It's depending on who you ask. They're the traditionalists that refuse to kind of acknowledge the changes in Vatican II. Some people say they're schismatics. Some people say that they're not schismatic. I have no dog in that race. Anyway, but Senior at the time was fully in there's no question whether he was schismatic or not. He was a Catholic, and wrote this book, and you know, it's pretty interesting, and I'm really digging it. We're reading it for our Integral Ecology reading group, and he talks so beautifully about the nature of work and about distributism and all this, and in the process, when he's talking about Catholic social doctrine and distributism and versus capitalism and kind of communism and all this, he comes up with this, this concept where he's talking about the Angelus, the traditional traditional prayers that were kind of the prayers of the peasant out in the field. So the Angelus, is a really beautiful prayer. You pray it in the morning, you pray it at noon, you pray it at the end of your work. And a lot of people still do that. I try to do it when I remember it. But they used to ring the bells in the parish, and everyone who could hear them would stop and pray the Angelus. And the Angelus just goes, the angel the person leading will say, the angel of the Lord declared unto Mary, and she conceived by the Holy Spirit. And then you pray a Hail Mary. And then you say, behold the handmaiden of the Lord, let it be done to me according to thy word. And you pray Hail Mary, goes, and the word was made flesh and dwelt amongst us. And then you pray the Hail Mary. Then you pray the pour forth, we beseech thee, O Lord, thy grace into our hearts. That prayer. Right. I love the way CL does this. CL has the Jazani had a different way of doing the Angelus, and I do the CL version because I think it keeps the narrative going, the riff on the narrative kind of going, where they just do it straight through without the Hail Marys, and then they do one Hail Mary. So you would just do those three right in a row, and then they say, and the word was made flesh and dwells amongst us in present tense. Then they pray Hail Mary, then the pour forth, we beseech thee, O Lord. So there's a little prayer thing for you, maybe something to incorporate into your Lent. The Angelus, but there used to be the Angelus bell, right? And the thing that Senior said was that parishes, now think about this, parishes are the same way a diocese that I was talking about with the question of corned beef, Colorado Springs versus Denver. A parish inside of a diocese is a geographical reality, right? You still see that somewhat like in Louisiana, where they still call their counties parishes, right? Because they were breakdowns within a larger breakdown, and they called these parishes because they were so Catholic down there at one point that their counties were called parishes. So a parish has, you can go down to your archdiocese offices, ask to see the map. You can look on the map and see what parish you live in. There is a particular church built to serve the people who live where you live. And like in our diocese, not too long ago, the archbishop said, we would really prefer that people go to their parish. And if you're not going to go to your parish, pick a parish and stick with it and build local community. Because Catholics tend to just go, they just look at their schedule on the weekend. They go, oh, well, I'll just hit the six o'clock over or such and such. Or let's go ahead and hit the 8 o'clock over here. So that way we can get on the road and we can go ahead and go to the mountains. Or, you know, people kind of like modern people kind of, they church shop, but they don't church shop the way Protestants church shop, kind of looking for the better music or the better preaching. They shop by, they narrow the scope based on their theology and their liturgy preferences. And then they shop by mass time within a set of parishes. And I'm guilty of it too. Now I can say that I 90% of the time, if I'm in town, 95% of the time, I either go to Holy Protection of the Mother of God Byzantine, or I go to Our Lady of Lourdes. And those are both of those pastors are in the Companions of Christ. They're all people that are deeply in communion with each other and friends with each other. A lot of people do attend both churches, and a lot of people that go to those two churches even live together in the same households and stuff. So they're definitely as close as you can get east, west, the kind of sister churches. They're kind of nearby. And so I'm doing okay in that regard, but you know what? I still don't technically belong to any parish. I'm not on the rolls anywhere. I never have been. So I've been on this tear of adulting here lately. I should adult. But anyway, see, I told you I was going to lose my train of thought, but I got it back. Parishes. They used to define a parish by how far you could hear the bells. I mean, think about that. I just love stuff like that. These old analog ways of defining space, you know, this as far as you can see, you know, is, you know, or this, it's like, if you can hear the bell from this church, then you fall into their parish. So they just keep going. And they had, so at some point they said, hey, can you hear that bell? No. Okay. Well, you're in the next parish over. There isn't one. Okay. Well, we need to build a church. And then they would build a big, beautiful church over there probably. Or maybe you would, you know, have to gravitate in or something, but you would know which parish you're in. And they used to these boundaries. Think about how far away you can hear a church bell. That's a pretty small, pretty local. And that is where you would live your Catholic life. Now, in that time, that's where you would grow your food. That's where you would live. That's where you would work. That's where you'd worship. You would probably marry someone from inside that scope. You would then build a house and raise your family inside that scope. And you would live in that environment. I would love to see, if I remember right, Aristotle defines the how many people are in a polis. You know, Aristotle says that man by nature is a political animal. I think if I remember right, he defines a polis in size as the amount of people that if a man stood on a podium or sat on a stage, the size of a man. So, you know, about 6 foot, if he stood on a 6 foot podium or 6 foot stage and spoke as loud as he could to give a speech, you know, and he's out there giving a speech and everyone crowded around. He could see the end. I think it's not, I know it's not sound, it's sight. He can see the, if everyone crowds as close as they can around the stage to listen, he can see the end of the people in each direction. That's the size of a polis. And Aristotle thinks that's the natural size of space that man is designed to live in. That is our human scope. Is a polis. It'd be interesting to see with average density based on the time how many people lived in the distance that a church bell would ring. I wonder if that ended up being the same amount of people as the polis, I would think that there's something to this whole thing. But oh, things have changed so much, have they not? We don't even live where we live. We live someplace else through ones and zeros going across tubes and wires or whatever it is the internet is. All right, so let's go to the break. When we get back, I'm going to try to get back to my riff on sickness because I got some ideas. All right, you're listening to The Counterposition. I am your host, Andrew Whaley.
Then all the color glass that painter's palette smash. All the colors of my soul.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counterposition, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a hyena laughing fool. I'm a hero without anyone to save. Love decked myself in toys. I'm a poor and kingly boy. Oh, I'm lovely, and I'm dumb.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. See, I said humble again. I'm trying to get this this new kind of like, I am your weary and delirious host, Andrew Whaley. Oh, goodness. You know what's funny? The question of whether or not I should stop saying humble host at the beginning of each segment like that has actually divided my audience somewhat. This all started with John Coons, who got a shout out the other day and texted me about it. Another shout out to John Coons. John objected to my saying humble host at the beginning of every one. He didn't object. He said, hey, maybe say it a couple of times a show, which I've been thinking myself. And then I said that out loud and I've gotten feedback. They're like, no, we like the humble host thing. It's like your tagline. So I've tried to keep the form, but switch up the content a little bit. oh, goodness. All right. So, man, I just said I thought that I had just enough to talk about today. And I'm seeing now that I had way, way more than I could actually talk about. So that's good, though. That means I've got another show in me. You know, it's like Hemingway used to finish writing every day, and he would always stop, like in the middle of a paragraph where he knew the rest of it was going. He would stop in the middle of a page. He would stop when he still had plenty left to write so that he could get going again. He left some water and primed the pump the next day. So he would sit down and pick up where he left off, and he knew that this guy was going to get out of the car, and he knew he was going to slip on a rock, and he was going to get mad and throw the rock and accidentally hit the car. So I don't know. I'm sure he never said anything like that, but you know, he would write that, and he would just sit down and write that, and that would be enough to get the juices flowing, and he would have enough to write the next day, and he'd always leave something left to write for the next day. So maybe that's this is kind of the accidental thing I've been getting in. I put too much paint on the palette. I kind of dip in and out of it. And then I have to remember what I talked about, because sometimes I go off the rails and go completely off of it, like I did today with the pseudoephedra and all that. But but sickness, that's where I was going. Gosh, I'm still a little out of it. Sickness. All right, so I want to talk about, you know, you've heard me talk about this before, where I haven't got a chance to really talk about it this year because we haven't had a really good solid snow day, but maybe like one. I love snow days. I love kind of like when nature shows up and just does something, knocks the power out, something. I love when modern man becomes subject to the natural order again. I love when nature shows up and goes, oh, hey, you're the thing, you're going to get all this stuff done today. Nope. You know what? Boom. You're going to stay home. Oh, you know what? And the cable's out. Oh, the internet too. Guess you're going to have to read a book. Going to have to talk to your family. Hang out. I love when nature does that to us. We think that we can like make up our gender and decide whether or not sex makes babies. And we can do all this stuff. We can redefine nature. We can just use it like some kind of silly putty or clay that we kind of like make things out of. And it's just this universal tofu that can take on whatever flavor we decide to give to it. That's what nature is. It's just knowledge is power. Francis Bacon was right. And we're not subject to anything in nature. We're our own makers. Rawr, Ubermensch. Rawr, and then a good solid snowstorm comes along and goes, dish. No, you're going to read a book and make soup over the fire. So, dang it. I think sickness is like that. Sickness, you're going along, and sickness just goes, remember, man, that thou art dust, and dust shalt return. And you just feel like hell. And you're just like, ah. And you're like, I'm going to get something done. You stand up and start working. You go, I'm going to sit back down. And it's nature's way of just kind of like smacking you upside the head, slowing you down for a second. And often when it comes like the nature of stress and not taking care of yourself, sometimes sickness is a wake up call, like smacks you upside the head and goes, hey, dummy, take a nap, chill the hell out, sleep a little bit, you know? But the other thing that I think is interesting about sickness is that it reminds us what normal feels like. Because we walk around feeling, now here, this is a weird thing. And try to follow me here. I'm going to try to make this as clear as possible. So I think what sickness is, if it's designed to do anything, it's designed to, you know, you notice a difference from you're supposed to be walking around well. You're in wellness. And then sickness comes along, and sickness is a distinctly different feeling than wellness. And you were functioning correctly. Now you're running on 3 out of 8 cylinders, and you can feel it and you know the difference. And it causes you to change your actions a little bit. And, you know, you get a fever. You know, you get sick to your stomach because your body's trying to get rid of stuff. Maybe you have diarrhea or something. Your body's trying to purge, trying to get rid of some stuff. You know, you notice a difference in your physical self, and that tells you something's off. And it's by kind of knowing that, when the different ways that things can go off and what we feel like when something's not off, we kind of understand what well is. Now, here's the problem. Wellness is not just the absence of sickness. And I think most of us walk around feeling like hell most of the time and not functioning optimally in any way, shape, or form. We don't eat what we're supposed to eat. We don't sleep the way we're supposed to. And then when we get sick, we're just going from bad to worse. And so we stop throwing up and the fever goes away and we can feel like we did before. And we think, oh, and we call that wellness, right? But actually we're kind of walking around in chronic sickness, most of us, most of the time, and not running the way our species is kind of designed to run. And this sickness and then a return to our normal state tricks us into thinking that that's what wellness is. You know, and I was thinking about this because I just watched, I just rewatched that TED Talk on porn by Gary Wilson. And he had this, this concept about, they told a story about how they wanted to do a study of the effects of broadband pornography on young men in college. And they couldn't run the test because they couldn't find any young men who hadn't been using broadband pornography as long as they could remember, for like, since they were, as an adult, they started at like 11. All these guys started like 10, 11 years old. And so all the deleterious effects of the chemical changes in your brain, the buildup of delta-5-HB, the downregulation of dopamine receptors, all that stuff that happens when you're giving yourself constant hyper-stimulated events through this digital means, and that the novelty of the click, 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 that I've talked about so many times in this show, because I think it's an epidemic and we need to talk about it. No one wants to talk about it. They just want to go, porn's bad, okay, don't do it, okay. Yeah, it's bad, that's naughty. Why would you do something that's naughty? Don't do that, it's naughty, it's bad, okay. We need to talk about this stuff. It's drug addiction. A bunch of people addicted to drugs. They're making the drugs. And we're and things like porn, but also things like Facebook and like screens and stuff are also ways in which we're kind of creating that that physical state. But like that, he compared that to like asking a fish, hey, what's water? What's water like? How do you like water? And they're like, water? They've never been out of it. They didn't know. That's just reality. That's just normal. It's just reality, right? So I kind of wonder if our normal, I wonder if going from sick back to what we think of as normal doesn't mask the same way that most guys in their mid-20s, especially now, if they don't stop using broadband pornography and masturbation for at least 6 to 9 months, they don't know what normal feels like because they've never felt it as an adult human. So I think like that, I don't think it's affecting me. I mean, I've got ADD and yeah, I get depressed and yeah, I have this and I have that and I do struggle with this. And sometimes I can't do this even when I want to and you know, da, da, da. And it's like, so you don't think that's connected to the porn? No, I mean, no. Have you ever been off porn? No idea. I think that is like, I think there's something similar happening to us as a broader society. With all the sugar and all the grains and all the weird preservatives and all the stuff that we eat that we're not designed to eat. I mean, you are 99. It's not, I always joke about 99.9999. You are 99.92% genetically identical to a hunter gatherer. I mean, they know the number. It's 99.92%. You are Fred Flintstone in a pair of tennis shoes. I mean, you're basically a caveman. You find there's little micro changes here and there. And we're learning even more about epigenetics and how trauma in even one or two generations back can actually affect the way that genes express in you and all that. I'm not arguing that micro evolution, even especially on the epigenetic level, can't happen. I'm saying that you're a caveman for the most part. And I think we're mostly sick all the time. And I think that getting really sick, getting worse, and then getting back to bad from worse makes us think that this is normal. And this time around, I was like, wow, as much as I feel better now compared to how I was when I had the fever, maybe if I just like took 6 months to a year and ate the way I'm supposed to eat and slept the way I'm supposed to sleep and did the things I'm supposed to do with my body and didn't give myself a bunch of weird light at night and all that stuff that made things normal again, maybe I'd feel even that much better. Anyway, there's my riff on sickness. I was kind of try to get down to sin and fallenness and take it to a spiritual level, but you know what? We ran out of time. Well, this was fun. I miss doing this. All right, thanks for coming out, kids. Let's pull the plug. Pop the cork on another episode of The Counterposition. We'll see you on the other side.
I take your place, marble stone. I take your place, marble stone.